This is KOIN Portland.
CBS News. Talks continue at this hour in Washington in efforts to avoid a nationwide rail strike. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. Details on the talks reported by Bernard Shaw in Washington.
Negotiators for the railroads and four shopcraft unions are back at the bargaining table with federal mediator William Usry also present. Earlier, Usry told CBS News that the unions have assured him they will not walk out so long as good faith bargaining continues. Right now, the union is discussing the railroad's latest offer with management representatives. The key issue leading a list of disagreements is the subcontracting of work out to other firms by the carriers. The unions say such work should be done by employees of the carriers. There is no crisis atmosphere in these negotiations as both sides continue chipping away. How far apart or how close they are is not known. Bernard Shaw, CBS News, Washington.
More news in a moment.
The French call it an apéritif. In America, it's the appetizer you drink. Either way, Dubonnet goes before.
Before, that's the time to say I'll have the glass of Dubonnet. Before I'm new by day or night, Dubonnet is always right before I have the glass. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course. And whether you call it an apéritif, appetizer. The proper time to enjoy its distinctive taste is before. Before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. It's a wine that's right for your appetite. Dubonnet Before. Made to make what comes after that much better. Of USA, Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
President Ford has been doing a little sightseeing in Peking. It's now mid-Thursday afternoon in China. The president should be completing a tour of the Summer Palace. Earlier, the president completed his talks with China's Vice Premier Deng Xiaoping. Both leaders termed the president's China visit a success. The president said U.S.-Chinese relations have been strengthened by the visit and the meetings Mr. Ford had with Chairman Mao Zedong. Mr. Ford leaves China on Friday. In Jakarta, Indonesia, workmen with white paint are sprucing up the streets where President Ford's motorcade will pass on Friday when he visits that country. The president will also go to the Philippines before coming home. Remember that doctor strike in California earlier this year? It looks like there could be another one. Mike Pulsifer reports from Sacramento.
Doctors are threatening a second statewide strike January 1st if something is not done about skyrocketing malpractice insurance rates. 40 women from Southern California, most of them doctors' wives, are staging a sit-in in the outer office of California Governor Edmund Brown, Jr. One of the women, Sandy Bernstein, says they have 350,000 signatures from persons who are demanding a special session of the state legislature to deal with the malpractice problem.
We intend this on staying until he acknowledges these petitions. Either he's going to say, yes, you can have a special session, or no, you can't have a special session. But he is going to acknowledge 350,000 signatures from the people of his state.
Brown says unless he hears some specific proposals to be discussed at a special session, he won't call one. Mike Pulsifer for CBS News, Sacramento.
Four bombs went off Wednesday night in Miami, causing little damage and no injuries. The first one exploded at the FBI headquarters. Other targets were post offices and the Social Security building. Three other bombs reportedly were found at other locations, but they did not go off. So far, there are no reports of anyone claiming responsibility. Reputed Chicago underworld figure Ned Bakes was found shot to death and his body stuffed in the trunk of his car near Chicago Wednesday. The 70-year-old Bakes was suspected of having been a member of the old Chicago mob of Al Capone. The Southeast Asian nation of Laos appears to have completed its swing toward communism. In Vientiane Thursday morning, it was announced the nominal head of the communist Prophet Lao movement has been named president of Laos. A Marxist hardliner with ties to Hanoi has been named prime minister. Now this.
Lefty Drew, pro bowler. How do you spell relief?
When I have heartburn, I spell relief R-O-L-A-I-D-S, Rolaids.
Mrs. Peterson, homemaker.
Acid indigestion, I spell relief R-O-L-A-I-D-S.
Rolaids spells relief. Each roll AIDS consumes 47 times its weight in excess stomach acid. Bubba Johnson, mechanic, how do you spell relief?
For gas, R-O-L-A-I-D-S.
Rolaid spells relief. Use only as directed.
You may feel it's an embarrassing subject, but since one out of every three people suffers hemorrhoid symptoms at some time, you should know about Preparation H. Preparation H gives prompt, temporary relief from occasional pain and itch in many cases. But Preparation H does more. Actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation. With so many having the problem, it's comforting to know that Preparation H helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues. Ointment or suppositories. Use only as directed.
In a speech in New York Wednesday night, Treasury Secretary William Simon proposed a tax reform program to do away with personal deductions and tax credits. Each American would pay a flat percentage of his income in taxes. However, the rate would not be the same for everyone. It would be graduated, and those in the higher brackets would pay up to 40% of their income in taxes and not be allowed to take deductions. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
In Radio 97 News, strong winds along the northern Oregon coast toppled a restaurant and charter boat service building under construction in Garibaldi. They caused power outages, downed trees, and other damage elsewhere this evening. The one-story structure under construction in Garibaldi was hit by high winds, sent plywood and other material flying. Fortunately, there were no reports of injuries. Elsewhere in Tillamook County, trees were reported down across roads. High water was flowing over some secondary roads. Gusts of up to 60 to 70 miles per hour also ripped some windshield wipers off of some cars. Traffic was slowed on Highway 6 by a landslide last night about 20 miles east of Tillamook. Last we were told, the road was reopened, but traffic was limited to one lane. In Lincoln County, there have been power outages, downed trees, and a cable was cut in Waldport by that wind. Electrical outages centered around Yakina Bay, east of Newport. There was a power outage in southeast section of the Rose City tonight, but we are told that everything should be all right there by now. Ground searchers returned from the mountains this evening, frustrated by some heavy winds, some ice, snow, freezing rain, and blizzard conditions on the northeast side of Mount Hood, where a plane is apparently down. Two helicopter crews also were frustrated in efforts to make a definite sighting where an emergency locating transmitter signals are being received near Polali Creek. That's at the 6,000-foot level. Weaker signals from the Cook Hill vicinity also are reported, but these are believed to be reflections from the Polali Creek area. The missing plane on Mount Hood is a Mooney four-seater, which went down Monday on the northeastern slopes of the mountain. The craft is registered to a Portlander. Also missing and believed down somewhere between the Dalles and Hillsborough is a Cherokee, flown by 22-year-old Tom Meek of the Rose City. He disappeared Friday while returning home after a visit to the Dalles. Needless to say, the weather is causing some real problems in the northwest tonight. Staff of the Oregon Public Utility Commissioner has recommended PP&L be allowed to construct a 391-mile transmission line from Medford to Midpoint, Idaho. PP&L hopes to have the line in operation by 1978. The weather: periods of rain through Thursday, showers and clearing periods on Thursday night with decreasing showers on Friday. Low tonight near 50, high Thursday near 53. Cooler Thursday night with lows in the upper 30s, a high Friday in the mid-40s. Chance of measurable rain near 100% through Thursday, 80% Thursday night. The current temperature is 51 degrees. That's Radio 97 News, 211.08.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. Our tale is another domestic story. It's about the happy home life of a modern young family. A life, unfortunately, which is cut brutally short. Please be warned. Some of the scenes may not make you feel safe and secure, even if your door is locked and bolted. It's a story about a family man named David Farmer. A family man brought to the point of saying these words to his closest friend.
I'm going to kill him, Stan. That's all I can do right now. I have to kill that animal, or I have to stop living myself. One or the other. That's how it has to be.
You're crazy, Dave. I can't believe that you mean that.
I mean every word. I'm going to kill him, and you're going to help me.
mystery drama, Promise to Kill, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Henry Slessor and stars Gordon Gould. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. To touch the heights you meant to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
Need a full-size car? Well, you came to the right place. Take Le Sabre, a genuine family car with lots of nifty Buick touches and room for six. Or the elegant Electra, the car that wrote the book on Buick luxury. Or Riviera, the luxury car that's also a great personal road car. The full-size Buicks. If you're looking for a place where you and your free spirit can really get together, this is it.
This is a routine gun trace request.
Some 3,000 calls a month like this one come into the National Gun Tracing Center from law enforcement agencies throughout the country requesting information on guns used in crimes.
Hello, this is ATF with the gun trace request.
We check with both national and foreign manufacturers and forward the dealer's name to the requesting agency. In some cases, we can do this in a matter of minutes.
I will hold. I'm sorry to report that the owner said the gun was stolen about 6 months ago, and he forgot.
I'm Rex Davis, director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Gun tracing is often the only means of solving a crime. If you secure your gun against theft, you make our job and that of your local police that much easier. Place a complete description of your gun with your other important papers. And if your gun is stolen, report it at once to the police or ATF. Remember, your stolen gun threatens everyone.
The scene is a suburban community called, appropriately, Park Pleasant. For that's exactly what it is. Pleasant and park-like. And very serene. A haven for the families of busy city executives like Dave Farmer. Dave is a lucky young man. He has a good job. He has a beautiful young wife named Connie. He has a daughter who promises to grow up looking just like her. But little Susan has plenty of time for that. She's only 5 years old. The day is Monday. The time is 8:15 a.m. The day is just beginning. So is the nightmare.
Dave, will you please hurry up? Stan's going to drive me crazy with that horn.
I'm coming.
I wish you wouldn't fly down those stairs. I'm always afraid you'll break your neck.
Listen, it's my neck that's the problem. I can't seem to tie my tie around it this morning.
It's no wonder with Stan blowing his horn that way. What's the big hurry? It's only quarter past.
He's got to be in court this morning.
Well, that's his problem. You don't have to be at work until 9, and I insist that you have some breakfast.
I really don't have time, honey.
Yes, you do. Look, the eggs are all made. The toast is halfway done.
No, it isn't. You haven't plugged it in.
Oh, my. That's Susan again. She insists on pulling plugs out of the wall.
You better keep her away from wires and stuff. She'll electrocute herself.
Anyway, here are the eggs.
Hey, what's going on here?
Come on in, Stan. I've been intimidated into eating breakfast.
Breakfast? Listen, I've got a case to argue this morning, and this carpool was your idea.
It's okay. I'm all ready.
That didn't take long. You didn't even taste those eggs.
They were great. Terrific.
I am sorry to rush you out so early, Connie.
Daddy!
Uh-oh. A new complication.
Where's my Pooh Bear?
That's right, my darling. You told Susan you were going to bring her a Pooh Bear last night.
But I did. I just got home too late to give it to her. She was already asleep.
Well, where is it, Daddy?
Wait a sec.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Come on, Dave. Am I going to hang up my client for a woolly bear, huh?
I want my Pooh Bear.
Here it is. Just as I promised.
Oh, isn't he cute? Don't you love him, Susie?
Oh, yes.
Say thank you, Daddy.
Thank you, Daddy.
Dave, will you please...
So long, darling.
Bye. And will you call me this afternoon?
Don't I always?
Have a good day. You too, Stan.
Thanks. You two have already ruined my day.
Serves you right, bachelor.
Well, I'll say one thing for married life. Hasn't hurt Connie's looks.
Yeah. She really looks great, doesn't she?
Yeah. I've almost forgotten how pretty she is. It's the first time I've seen her in more than a month.
That's not my fault, pal. I told you what to do. Get yourself a date and we'll make it a foursome one night.
That's the trouble with being a bachelor. You've always got to scrounge around for a date.
Okay, we'll make it a threesome.
I'm sure you'd rather not. Three's a crowd, right?
Not when two of them are married. Anyway, it's about time you made it a permanent foursome. Why don't you make up your mind which of your 55 girlfriends you want to marry?
Tried it once. I didn't like it.
If at first you don't succeed, try again.
Yeah, that's what you say. You hit it right the first time.
Just lucky, I guess. No kidding, Stan. How about going to the theater? The theater.
What about it?
I forgot to tell Connie to go to the box office.
What for?
Some tickets were left for us at the Park Pleasant Playhouse for tonight. But we have to pick them up before noon.
Relax. We'll stop at a phone booth on the way.
Susie, are you sure you want to dry those dishes? Mommy can do them.
I want to help.
Well, it's sweet of you, baby, but there are only a few.
Can I give Winnie the Pooh scrambled eggs?
No, dear. Bears don't eat eggs.
What do they eat?
Bears eat honey.
Well, I could give him...
No. You can't give Winnie the Pooh any honey, either. I mean, bears don't eat anything this time of the year. They just sleep.
Oh, then maybe I better put him to bed.
Now, that's a good idea.
How long do bears have to sleep?
Well, they usually sleep through the whole winter.
That long? Maybe Pooh bears are different.
Run along now, dear. Mommy has to answer the phone.
Maybe it's for me.
Maybe so. Hello?
Hi, hon. It's Paula.
Hi. One second. It's not for you, baby. It's your Aunt Paula. Now you go give Pooh Bear a nap.
Okay.
Paula, hi.
How are you feeling?
Oh, fine. You're calling pretty early, aren't you?
I'm calling to give you a wonderful opportunity. If you meet me in the city before noon, I'll buy you lunch and then we can go shopping.
Oh, I can't today, Paula. I'm sorry.
Why not?
Well, Susie's home from school for one thing. They're having one of those teachers' conferences.
Why can't the maid take care of her?
Because it's Emily's day off, and I've got a dozen things to do around the house, and at the moment, I have to answer the doorbell.
Go ahead. Who's stopping you?
Well, do you want to hold on, or should I call you back?
I'll hold on.
Oh, hello, Vernon.
Hi, Miss Farmer.
What in the world time is it?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I don't have a watch, but, Well, I thought it was the right time.
Well, you usually deliver the groceries around 10, don't you?
Well, sure, usually, but I thought, well, you know, they'd come early today.
Well, all right. I suppose it doesn't make all that much difference.
It does to me, Miss Farmer.
What?
Listen, what do you want me to do? I mean, should I bring in the stuff right now?
Or... Well, of course.
I could leave them out on the truck for a while. No, I guess that isn't such a smart idea. I mean, you got milk and cream and stuff. They might get spoiled.
Well, of course they might get spoiled, Vernon. What an idea. Bring them in right away.
Yeah, sure. I'll do that, Miss Farmer. I won't be long.
Okay. Paula? Are you still there?
I'm here. What's going on?
Well, it's just a boy from the supermarket. Vernon, whatever his name is.
Oh, yes, the blonde Adonis. All muscle, including his head.
Well, there is certainly something wrong with his head today. He's talking so strangely. Anyway, listen, about the city. Thursday is absolutely the first day I can make it.
Here it is, Miss Farmer.
All right, Vernon. Paula, what do you think about Thursday?
Thursday's fine. I'll call you Wednesday just to make sure you don't chicken out.
All right, Paula. Bye.
So long.
Miss Farmer?
What?
Is it okay if I put everything here?
Well, yes, of course, Vernon.
Pretty big load today, but I can handle it. I'm strong, you know?
Yes.
You want me to put the milk and stuff in the refrigerator?
No, just leave them there.
know, it was really something. This morning, I mean, the way I felt driving over here.
Yes, it's a lovely day.
You know what I mean? Driving over here and knowing that, well, that I was going to see you.
Well, that's very sweet, Vernon.
I kept seeing your face in front of me like it was in the windshield, you know?
Well, Vernon, what a strange thing to say.
I kept thinking about, well, about how it was going to be. And when I rang the bell and you opened the door and you saw me and... I don't know. Here we are. I mean, just acting like always.
Like always?
You know, like nothing was special.
Well, never mind the rest of that stuff, Vernon. I'll empty the boxes myself.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, that'll be better. We don't have much time, I guess. I gotta be back at the store around 9,
9:30. Vernon, what are you doing?
Oh, you've got such soft hands, you know.
Please, don't do that.
Listen, what about her, you know, your little girl?
Susie? What about her?
Well, I mean, well, where is she, school or something?
Vernon, stop that.
Oh, gee. Oh, your skin is... Oh, I don't know. It's like something else. It's not just that skin.
Stop it, for heaven's sakes.
Please, don't tease no more, Miss Palmer. Don't tease. I ain't got much time.
Vernon, will you let me go? What is the matter with you?
Where do you want to go? You want to go upstairs?
You let me go. I'll bring the house down.
Don't.
I will call the police. I swear I will.
Now, stop that, Miss Farmer. You just stop playing games with me. Don't, Mrs. Farmer. Now, please, be nice. Don't make me hurt you. Please, please.
Sure you dialed the right number?
Positive. Think I don't know my own number?
Well, a lot of people don't.
Connie's got to be home. We left her only half an hour ago.
Well, maybe she's in the bath.
Susie picks up the phone when she is. I'll try just once more. Calling the farmer residence.
Yeah, this is the right place. Who am I speaking to, please?
Well, maybe you can answer the same question, since it's my house.
Are you Mr. David Farmer?
Yes, that's right. And who are you?
This is Patrolman Ernest McLeavy, Mr. Farmer.
Did you say patrolman?
What was that?
Listen, is there something wrong out there? Was there a fire or something?
Good Lord, Dave, what's...
No, Mr. Farmer, it's not a fire. Could you please tell me where you're calling from?
I'm in a phone booth on the expressway. For Pete's sake, will you tell me what you're doing in my house? Let me speak to my wife.
I'm sorry, Mr. Farmer. You can't do that. Maybe it would be best if you came back home.
I'm not doing anything until you tell me what happened there.
There was a little trouble. I mean, a lot of trouble.
I want to know what kind.
You'd better just come back here, Mr. Farmer. Your wife and kid were hurt very bad.
Oh, Lord. Connie, Susie, how bad?
What's going on, for Pete's sake?
I want to know what happened. I want to know how they were hurt and how badly.
I hate to tell you, Mr. Farmer. I mean, just like this over the phone.
Damn you, tell me!
They're dead. Both of them are dead, Mr. Farmer.
It's a strange place to find yourself in the middle of a nightmare. A highway crowded with cars and trucks, the bright midwinter sun shining in your eyes, hearing a disembodied voice telling you that everything you cared for in life is gone. Vanished in one bloody instant, one terrible moment of madness, one meaningless action. But this nightmare isn't over for Dave Farmer, or for a young man named Vernon White. We'll be back in just a moment with Act Two.
Way back in 1876, it was brewed and aged to deliver a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability found in no other beer at any price. I'm talking about Budweiser.
And it's still brewed that way today, with pride, without compromise, to be the king of beers. The largest selling beer in the history of the world, for one simple reason. That Beechwood-aged Budweiser taste, and that speaks for itself. Hear it talking?
When you say that, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers. There is no one or what, there's only something left, because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser,
you've said it.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Well, this is Beverly Sills. Did you know that of all the arts, music is the only one in which a blind person can participate freely in spite of blindness? However, even in music, the blind needs special help in order to stand on an equal footing with the sighted. The Louis Braille Foundation for Blind Musicians works to promote the interests of the blind in the field of music. The foundation, a national nonprofit organization, urgently needs your financial help. The services of the Louis Braille Foundation are available to any blind person and provide auditions, evaluations and counseling, scholarship aid, paid engagements for qualified musicians, and transcription of music into Braille. The foundation depends solely on the public for its support. Send your tax-deductible gifts to the Louis Braille Foundation, 112 East 19th Street, New York, 10003. If you know a musically gifted blind person who needs help, please contact the Louis Braille Foundation at area code 212-982-7290.
The scene changes. We are no longer in the quiet suburb of Park Pleasant. We are in a large, high-ceilinged room flanked by American flags, solemn with the traditions of American justice. This is a courtroom. Seated in the front row is David Farmer. Beside him sits his friend Stan, his sister-in-law Paula. His face is ashen, haunted. And at the defense table, his hair neatly combed and brushed, his cheeks rosy, wearing his best blue suit, looking very much like the all-American boy, sits Vernon White. Killer.
Your Honor.
Yes, Mr. Waterman.
The defense has no objection to these photographs being submitted to the jury, but these proceedings have been delayed long enough.
Very well. Is the prosecution ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then please continue your examination of the witness.
Yes, Your Honor. Patrolman McCleary, you've seen these photographs we've shown the jury?
Yes, sir.
Is it an accurate representation of the scene you discovered that morning at the Farmer house?
Yes, sir. That's what I found.
A young woman, brutally assaulted, strangled to death.
Yes, sir.
Evidence of a struggle.
Yes, sir.
A young wife and mother, slain in her own kitchen, and a child, 5 years old, slain. Just as horrible.
Your Honor, may I object to the prosecution's use of such emotional terms?
I beg the defense attorney's pardon. You're quite right. One hardly needs words like brutal and horrible to describe this crime. The facts speak for themselves. Now, Patrolman McCleary, did you also see several boxes of groceries in that kitchen?
Yes, sir. About four boxes.
You concluded that a delivery had been made that morning?
Yes, sir. The perishables hadn't been put away.
And that led you to make inquiries in the neighborhood about the arrival of the grocery truck?
Yes, sir. We learned that the truck from the Park Pleasant supermarket had been there and left.
Mm-hmm. And you sought out the delivery boy, or should I say, the delivery man?
Yes, sir. I interrogated Mr. Vernon White.
See? And what did he tell you?
He apologized.
For what?
He apologized for killing Mrs. Farmer and her daughter.
Dave,
Dave, eat something, will you? Don't just stare at your plate. Now, come on, eat.
No, I can't.
David, this is ridiculous. No breakfast, no lunch. What good is that going to do you?
No good.
Oh, talk some sense onto him, Paula. Look at him. He's lost 10 pounds since the trial started.
David, please. She was my sister. I loved her. I loved Susie. But I know that I have to stay alive. I know that. And so do you.
Come on. Let's get back to court.
Vernon, was Mrs. Farmer alone when you walked into the kitchen?
Yes.
Did you attack her right away?
Attack her?
You heard me. Did you just reach out and grab her?
Well, no, of course not.
Did you try to embrace her, kiss her, anything like that?
Yeah, I guess I did, because,
Because what, Vernon?
Well, because I thought she liked me. Because I thought she wanted me to.
The defendant will rise. Vernon White, you have been tried and convicted for the crime of homicide in the first degree. The laws of this state, as amended on October 5th, 1974, impose a mandatory sentence for this crime. Therefore, it is my duty to instruct the warden of the state prison in Pigstown to take you to a place where you shall be kept until the 31st day of March, 1976, at which time you will be hanged from the neck until dead. May God have mercy on your soul.
Who is it? I said, who is it?
It's Paula. Please let me in, David.
All right.
Well, well. Will the real David Farmer please shave?
How did you find me?
If you must know, Stan told me.
Stan has a big mouth.
You look terrible. You look as run down as this hotel.
What did you want me to do? Stay up there in that house?
Well, you could have found something better than this.
This suits me fine.
If you want to stay in a hotel for a while, fine. But the least you can do is get a decent room.
This isn't a hotel room, Paula. This is a waiting room.
What?
A waiting room. A place for me to wait for the 31st of March.
Oh, Dave. Dave, that's terrible. That's so senseless.
What else have I got to do? But count the days.
But to do this to yourself, to hole up in this awful flea bag, staring at the calendar, thinking of nothing but that poor moron's execution.
He's not a moron. He's Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Didn't you hear what he said in court? He thought Connie liked him, that she wanted him.
Dave, listen to me. Vernon White killed something very precious to me, too. Dave, I have to tell you something.
Tell me what?
What you want to happen isn't going to happen.
What did you say?
There isn't going to be any 31st.
There's always a 31st, 7 months out of the year.
I mean, there isn't going to be any execution. Stanley called to tell me, and I think that's why he gave me your address, so I could break the news to you instead of him.
What are you talking about?
The appeal was accepted because of Vernon's substandard intelligence, oh, something like that.
You're lying to me.
Dave, they've commuted his sentence to life imprisonment.
They can't do that. They can't.
They did, Dave. Vernon White went through tests. He's not an imbecile, and he's not insane. But he's just not, smart enough to know the difference between right and wrong.
They can't do that. He killed Connie. He killed my little girl. Good Lord, Paula.
You've got to accept it, Dave. Don't let it make such a difference to you.
No. Never. I'll never accept it. Do you think I can go on living with him alive and breathing and walking around and smiling and Connie and Susie dead? No. I won't let it be. Stan, admit it. Vernon isn't crazy. They would have pleaded insanity if he was.
It's not a matter of sane or insane, Dave. There is such a thing as clemency.
Yes, clemency for the criminals. not for the victims.
This kid's got an IQ of under 80.
He was smart enough to think Connie liked him. He thought she had a crush on him. He was so used to having girls ogle him in the supermarket, juggling those crates with his big muscles.
Dave, this is useless. The court has accepted the appeal. You just don't have any recourse.
You're wrong. I do.
Like what?
I'm going to kill him, Stan.
Huh?
That's all I can do right now. I have to kill that animal, or I have to stop living myself. One or the other. That's how it has to be, Stan.
Well, you're crazy, Dave. I don't believe you mean that.
I mean every word. I'm going to kill him. And you're going to help me.
But the man's in prison.
People get killed in prison. There's a way to do everything if you have the desire and the money. I have both.
You haven't got that kind of experience.
But you have, Stan. You were in criminal law once. You must know people.
I'm sorry, Dave.
You're supposed to be my best friend. If that's what you are, prove it. Help me wipe this germ off the face of the earth.
It wouldn't prove anything.
It will to me. I want his life for Connie's, for Susie's, and mine. Whose life do you want to save, Stan? Vernon White's or mine?
Oh, no. I hope you're not talking about...
Sure, that's what I'm talking about. You heard what I said. I can't live if he does. I'd just as soon stick my head into an oven.
You are putting me in one hell of a spot.
Find out what I have to do, Stan.
Mr. Ross, this is Dave Farmer.
Hello, Mr. Farmer. Nice meeting you.
Yes, hello.
Mr. Ross is in the transportation business. He was a client of mine a few years back.
Yeah, long distance hauling, you know.
Yeah, can we get to the point?
This is the point. Mr. Ross has a brother named Joey.
Yeah, Joey, right.
Yes, well, unfortunately, a few years ago, the Rosses got into a jam.
We was a moving company, me and my brother.
Yes, I got Mr. Ross off, but his brother wasn't that lucky. He's serving a 10-year sentence right now in Peakstown.
Peachtown, right.
Yes, well, Joe's a friendly guy. You know, he's made a lot of friends in prison.
Yeah, Joey's okay.
The point, Stan.
Proposition is this. Now, Joey is a trustee at Peakstown, and even though he's made some, you know, errors in his life, he doesn't like child killers any more than we do. He might want to do something about Vernon White.
We ain't talking about favors, though.
No, not favors. What we're talking about entails a certain amount of risk. So it's only fair that we arrange some compensation.
I'll pay anything. Name your price.
We've already agreed on a price. It's $3,000.
I'll make it five.
Wait a minute, Dave.
I'll make it five if you kill him before the 31st.
Let's see. When did you pay this plumbing bill?
I don't know, Paula.
It's marked paid, but I don't see the canceled check.
Well, what does it matter?
It does matter, Dave. You can't let everything slide this way. Half a dozen people are threatening to sue you for this or that. And I suppose you know that you let your insurance policy lapse. You went right past the 30-day grace period.
What's the difference? You know why I had that policy.
But it's ridiculous to let it lapse. One of these days you might
want... Don't say that, Paula.
Anyway, I called your broker and arranged to have it paid. I'm surprised Stan didn't do that for you when he had the power of attorney.
Stan isn't a bookkeeper. He's a lawyer.
Still, he could have been more helpful. He knew how spaced out you were. He could have hired a girl or somebody to pay your bills, keep your accounts in order.
Paula, will you stop taking off on Stan? What have you got against the guy?
What have you got in his favor?
He's my best friend. He proved that.
Maybe. I wonder how friendly he'd be if you were broke.
Oh, cut it out, Paula.
Oh, look at this checkbook. None of the stubs filled in. And you must have spent $1 billion.
There were expenses.
I know that. But Stan sold those securities for you back in March. That meant a deposit of almost $100,000.
Paula, I can't think now.
Okay. But I just want you to know that there are expenditures I can't explain.
Hello?
Dave. Dave, it's Dan.
Yeah? What's happening?
Dave, don't get upset about this, but something went wrong up in Peakstown.
What do you mean, wrong?
I don't have all the details yet. Our friend Joey up there tried to fulfill his mission this morning, but he botched it.
How? How?
Vernon isn't dead. He's hurt. He's got a knife wound, but he's alive.
We had a deal, Stan.
I know. We won't pay until we get what we pay.
I don't care about the money.
It's just a delay, that's all.
For how long?
We can't be sure. Vernon's in the prison hospital. It's a hard place to reach, Dave. But don't worry. Mr. Ross says he'll get the job done.
He's got to. He's got to.
And so the executioner has failed to perform his allotted task. Vernon White is alive, and not so well, in the prison hospital. But the physicians who will treat his wounds don't know that he's suffering from what might well be a terminal illness, the disease called revenge. We'll see if Dave Farmer gets that revenge in a few moments when I return with Act Three.
In God We Trust, America Speaks. In the words of John F. Kennedy, the torch has been passed to a new generation, born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history, the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
Ahmed is rattling his pan, begging for food. If he doesn't get it, he's going to die. Ahmed lives in Pakistan and is only 11 years old. He needs our help. George W. is an alcoholic. He wishes he weren't, but it's a disease, and he wants to get rid of it so he can once again support his family and bring dignity back into his life. Most of us are much better off. We have enough food to eat and we have good health. When worshiping God, we express our thanks, but God wants more from us than thanks. We must do something for those of us not so well off. This year, while celebrating America's 200th birthday, join with others at your local church or synagogue and make plans to help relieve suffering. You'll end up helping yourself as well. Welcome God to America's bicentennial. Practice what you pray. A public service of Religion in American Life, the Ad Council, and this station.
Constance and Susan Farmer is still alive. David Farmer is alive, too, if walking, talking, and breathing are signs of life, as his sister-in-law, Paula, sits in a restaurant table and looks at his pale features. Her eyes are clouded with pity.
Dave, when I first met you, when Connie introduced us, I remember thinking you were sweet and kind, maybe a little vulnerable.
Vulnerable?
Seeing what you wanted to see in people. Giving them nice, clean images. Even if they were more complicated than you wanted them to be.
I suppose you're talking about Stan.
No. I'm talking about Connie.
Connie?
You see, I had my sister for a sister much longer than you had her for a wife.
I never saw anything complicated about Connie.
It was hard to see. She had such a bright, glowing surface.
Paula, we were married 6 years. Do you think I didn't know Connie?
She always wanted so much, Dave. That's what worried me when she told me she was getting married. She was used to 100 phone calls, 7 dates a week, 50 men in her life at all times.
She was beautiful, Paula.
I know. She was dazzling. Maybe that's what happened to that poor delivery boy. He was dazzled out of his senses.
Is that why you wanted to have dinner with me? To defend that moron?
No, Dave. I had another reason.
Well, what is it?
I finished all the books last night.
So?
I did everything I could, Dave. I got everything to balance, practically to the penny.
I knew you were a great bookkeeper.
The only trouble is, I still can't explain some of the cash withdrawals that were made by Stan.
Forget them.
Forget?
You heard me.
Forget
$25,000? $25,000?
That's right. Well, now even you seem surprised.
Well, it can't be that much, Paula. It just can't be.
It is. And I think you must know what that means.
$25,000?
All taken out in cash.
Well, but if there were expenses, Dave, you know that. I'm sorry if they weren't all itemized.
That's not like you, though. You were always a stickler about money. You always said you were raised poor, so you had respect for the buck.
Look, Dave, I wasn't at my best at the time either. Now, Connie meant a lot to me, too, you know.
Stan, what happened to that money?
Hey, come on. What kind of tone of voice is that?
I want an answer.
Oh, wait, are you accusing me or something? Oh, wait a minute. I just got it. Paula put you up to this. Hmm? Paula never liked me much. She's found the perfect way to get back at me.
The money's gone. It went into somebody's pocket. And I want to know whose. I want to know if there's something you're hiding.
Maybe there are some things that got to be hid.
Nothing like this.
You were willing to spend $5,000.
That was different. That money had a special purpose. Now, what's the special purpose for that 25 grand?
I wanted to spare you the truth, Dave.
What truth?
Well, even now, I don't want to tell you. I'd rather you thought that I was a thief and a swindler, that I robbed you.
Is that what you did?
No. What I did for you and for Connie.
Connie?
I swore to myself that you'd never learn about it.
Learn about what? The money?
About what the money bought.
Well, go on.
It went into somebody's pocket, all right. George Waterman's.
Vernon's defense attorney? Are you kidding me?
I had to do it, Dave. I had to make things easier.
Well, how could they be easier? Vernon confessed. His prints were on everything. There wasn't any doubt of his guilt.
Dave, the money bought a note.
What note?
I should have burned it the minute it was in my hand, but I didn't. Lord knows why. Who knows? Maybe I was afraid that this would happen, that I'd have to account to you for what I did.
What note? Who wrote it? What did it say?
I have it here. It's in this drawer. Oh, I would give my right arm if you never had to see it.
It's Connie's stationery.
Yes.
Her handwriting.
Yes.
I have to see you. Dave leaves for the city at 8:30. I'll try to send Susie out to day school. I'll be waiting for you, darling. Please don't disappoint me.
I am sorry, Dave.
It's her handwriting.
Yes, I know.
I have to see you. Dave leaves for the city. Good Lord, Stan. What does this mean?
The note was sent to Vernon White.
No. No, that just can't be.
He turned it over to his attorney after the arrest. Waterman didn't want to submit it into evidence before he talked to me. He knew it wouldn't make any difference as far as the verdict was concerned. Well, it might even have made his client a little less pathetic, but he knew it would make a difference to us.
I'm not going to believe it. I'm not.
Oh, heaven help me. I didn't want to either. But it's the truth. $25,000 worth of ugly truth.
Who is it?
Paula, please open the door, Dave.
Don't worry. I didn't bring you chicken soup, just a couple of containers of coffee.
Did you think I'd need sobering up?
You do, Dave.
I haven't been drinking.
I thought you might be upset tonight.
Why?
Because of what happened.
Have you been talking to Stan?
No, of course not. I have nothing to say to Stan, and he vice versa. I meant about Vernon White. Do you still take your coffee black?
What about Vernon?
He was released from the prison hospital, but the authorities thought it would be too risky just to put him back among the same prisoners, so they transferred him.
Where?
Well, I guess they thought he couldn't be very dangerous after the knife wound and all that, but he must be a strong young
man.
Get
to the point.
He got away, Dave. Vernon's loose.
It wasn't easy, Mr. Farmer, let me tell you.
But you really know something?
I know everything. This kid Vernon is a dope. He ain't playing with a full deck, you know what I mean?
I know.
Well, a pal of mine, he lives on East Avenue. He gives me the tip. Some kids in the neighborhood, like a gang, they do a lot of prowling around the section where they're knocking down buildings for some kind of housing project. Well, they spotted this blonde guy sleeping in one of the condemned buildings. I think maybe they rolled him, only he didn't have no money.
What happened to him? Where is he now?
Well, my pal, he goes to have a look at the guy and sees the kind of clothes he's wearing. He figures he busted out of the joint.
Where is he? Where's Vernon White?
My friend's got him, like in custody. You know what I mean. Sometimes there's a reward for turning in escaped cons.
He wouldn't call the police?
No. My friend is not exactly friendly with the cops. But bread is bread, Mr. Farmer.
I'll pay your friend. How much does he want? $1,000?
More like $2,000. And then there's me. I put in a lot of time.
All right. $1,000 for you, $2,000 for your friend. Only, I want one other thing. I want a gun. Hello, Vernon.
Oh. Oh, hello.
Do you remember me, Vernon?
No, I guess I don't. No, wait, you look kind of familiar.
Look hard, Vernon.
Nope, I just don't remember. Hey, you bring me something to eat?
My name is Farmer.
Yeah, the man that was here before, he said he was going to bring me sandwiches or something. I sure am hungry.
Vernon, doesn't the name mean anything to you?
Well, what was it again?
Farmer. David Farmer. My wife's name was Connie. My daughter was named Susan. Do you remember now?
Yeah, I remember. I saw you up at Park Pleasant and, in the court.
I'm her husband, Vernon. The husband of the woman you murdered. The father of the child.
Mr. Farmer, I'm really sorry about what happened. I really am.
Yes, Vernon, everyone told me you were sorry.
I mean, I didn't mean to hurt your wife. I really didn't.
And the little girl?
No, I didn't mean to hurt either one.
You liked them, didn't you? You liked my wife, and she liked you.
Well, I thought she did, Mr. Farmer. She told me she did. Only when I came to see her, like she asked me to, she put up this big fight, and I got all upset about it. I didn't know what I was doing anymore.
A lot of the girls like you, don't they, Vernon?
Yeah. A lot of girls are at the store. Hey. Is that a real gun?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Well, anyway, she sent me that note, and I thought she was like the girls in the store. Well, she said it was good looking. That's what he told me.
He? Who told you?
Well, he did. He did. Yeah, the man I used to see there.
What man?
I forget his name. The lawyer.
What?
Yeah, he told me that she liked me. And I'd be loading up stuff at the supermarket, and he'd drive up and say, "Hey, Vernon, Mrs. Farmer thinks you're a real good-looking kid. She'd really like to get you home."
You're crazy. Nobody told you any such thing.
Yeah, he did. And then he gave me this note that she wrote to me.
He gave you the note? This lawyer?
Yeah. I swear, he gave me this note, and it said, "I want to see you. My husband's going to the city, and I want you to come around."
You're a liar. You're a liar.
No, look, I swear it's true. He was that friend of yours, the one that you drove around with a lot. And he gave me the note, and I went there, and
She didn't like me. She didn't like me at all. And that's when everything went wrong. Everything.
Come on in, Stan.
Oh, thanks. Did you hear the good news?
About Vernon White? Yes, I heard.
Yeah. Well, they'll be holding him in maximum security for a while. You can scratch any idea of getting at him, at least for the time being.
It's okay, Stan. I've dropped the idea. Vernon's death doesn't mean anything to me now.
Wow. I'm relieved to hear that.
In fact, I was the one who turned him in. That anonymous tip to the police was mine.
But how did you know where...
I didn't see any reason for Vernon's death. Not after he told me about the note. Yes. I talked to him, Stan. Mr. Ross helped me find him. And we had a good, long talk.
I hope you didn't take him too seriously, Dave. You know the kid's a moron.
He's dim-witted, not a moron. Dim enough to think that Connie liked him just because you said so. Dim enough to believe that note was meant for him when it was really sent to you.
Wait a minute, Dave.
I couldn't understand it at first. Then I remembered how it was between you and Connie before I came along. I had a little more to offer, so she picked me. But she didn't want to give you up either.
Dave, now I don't know
but
what you heard.
Something happened, Stan. Connie threw you over for some reason. I remember when you stopped coming around to the house.
Dave, I swear to you that
she must have hurt you pretty bad. So bad that you wanted to hurt her back. So you picked Vernon.
Please, let me say something.
He told me all about it. What you used to say to him, to goad him on, get him all excited. And then you gave him that note. The note Connie once sent you.
I didn't mean it to work out the way it did. So help me, I didn't. I didn't know what he'd do. I just wanted to teach her a lesson.
That's why you were willing to help me. Willing to let me kill that boy. So he'd never give you away.
Dave, I didn't mean it. I didn't want it to happen, Dave.
But it happened. He killed them. Connie and Susie. You killed them.
No, it's not me. I swear it wasn't.
Will you swear, Stan?
Yes.
On your knees?
On my knees, Dave, on my knees. I swear it wasn't me.
All right, Stan.
Dave, that gun, you...
It's the 31st, Stan.
An execution has taken place on the 31st of the month. In the mind of David Farmer, justice has been done. But now, the executioner himself must face the bar of justice for usurping the privilege only the law can have. Only the law must have. I'll be back shortly.
When a storm's been brewing, whose weather bureau helps your weather bureau give you an early warning?
Who got all of the world's pilots and control towers to speak English so you can land safely no matter where you fly?
Who's just about wiped out smallpox so your kids may never need a vaccination? And who set the standards of purity on the imported food you eat?
Who helps you in dozens of ways you never dreamed of? The United Nations. Find out what the UN's been doing to help you.
Send for the free UN booklet. Write United Nations Association, Box 475, New York 10017. That's United Nations Association, Box 475, New York 10017. There's always been a U in the UN, a public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
We hope you didn't find our little domestic tale too grim. When violence strikes close to home, it's always more upsetting. If you are disturbed, Why not sit back now? Have a nice warm drink. Go to bed early and take tomorrow off. Then you'll be all ready for a little more terror and suspense when we return with another episode of Radio Mystery Theater. Our cast included Gordon Gould, Earl Hammond, Russell Horton, Hetty Galen, Leslie Woods, and Roy LeMay. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
He stopped for a moment, and he sort of looked back over his shoulder. Just long enough so I could get a glimpse of his face.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he looked like Boris Karloff.
No. Yes. But so help me, I know who he did look like.
Yeah, and now you're going to tell me it was your bench sitter, right? Your, what is it you call him, your viewer?
That's just what I'm telling you. I'll lay $1 to donuts that old bum used to visit or sneak into this house around 50 years ago when he was a young guy.
So, maybe he did. But what's it to you? What do you care?
Well, I just sure give a hell of a lot to know what went on in that house that was strong enough to call a man back from today to walk through that frame to yesterday.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
KYN Portland. Transport movement.
CBS News. The Lao People's Congress this morning named Prince Souvanouvong, nominal leader of the Communist Party at Laos, to be president of the new Lao People's Democratic Republic of Laos. Good morning. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Laotian National Radio, in a broadcast monitored in Bangkok, Thailand, also announced the chairman of the Laotian Communist Party, Khaesom Phramvorhan, is the new premier. The radio Wednesday had announced creation of the new republic, and an end to both the monarchy and the coalition government. The move consolidates communist power in Indochina. The State Department says the United States will continue to maintain diplomatic relations with Laos despite the communist Pathet Lao overthrow of the 19-month-old coalition government. The UN Security Council has scheduled a meeting for this afternoon to discuss Egypt's and Lebanon's demands for a debate of Israeli air raids on Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon. Lebanese police say those raids claimed more than 100 lives. The meeting was set late last night after hours of private consultations among council members. Council President, British Ambassador Ivor Richard, said the agenda will place as the first matter of business a discussion of the Egyptian request that the Palestinian Liberation Organization take part in the Middle East debate scheduled for January. CBS News continues following this message.
Cold medicines. Chews. The green liquid you take every 4 hours when confined to home or at bedtime. That's 4 hours relief per dose. Or give your cold a contact. Contact's different. Just one capsule works up to 12 hours. All through the day and all through the night. Contact doesn't have ingredients for pain and cough like the liquid. And just one contact gives you as long relief from sneezing, drips, and congestion as 3 doses of the liquid. The tiny time pills do it. Now, for all day and all night relief, what'll you choose? Stay home with your cold or take contact?
Give your cold to contact if you're cold.
Use only as directed.
A group of gunmen reported to be Indonesians are now holding a smaller group of hostages aboard a train in northern Holland, but they've warned they'll begin shooting their hostages methodically one by one unless authorities give them a bus in which to escape. Joyce Van Meer has more on the story.
Passengers of the second car of the hijacked train have all escaped. It's estimated now only some 36 hostages remain with the 7 hijackers in the first car. Officials had hoped that the long talk between the terrorists and a Moluccan pastor might bring a quick and safe end to the affair. Instead, the pastor emerged with a rigid ultimatum. The ultimatum demands a bus to transport the remaining hostages with the terrorists to the airport. The Minister of Justice, however, still says no hostages will be allowed to go anywhere with the hijackers. This is Joyce Van Meer for CBS News in Berlin.
In Paris, a 13-hour hostage drama ended in a hail of bullets as two gunmen tried to make their getaway from a central city bank with $2 million and two hostages in a police-provided getaway car. Caught in the Parisian traffic jam, the car rammed the taxi. Police closed in, shooting one gunman to death. The other apparently tripped and injured his head while trying to escape and was taken into custody. The two women hostages were uninjured. Treasury Secretary William Simon, speaking within hours of the beginning of House consideration of a bill to extend billions of dollars in tax cuts and revise the tax code, last night suggested in New York City that a single, graduated, progressive tax replace the existing system. More news in a moment.
It's Christmas 1975, and historian Dr. Stuart Frank talks about a particular Christmas tree ornament he coveted as a child.
My best Christmas, my most memorable Christmas, was as a little boy when I had the opportunity to go out to New Jersey to some friends of the family. These folks were descended from some brilliant military officers in the Confederacy, and they had a cookie that had been baked for one of the great-great-grandmothers of these people and placed on the Christmas tree of General Robert E. Lee. And I can remember wanting to eat that cookie.
I'm Douglas Edwards, CBS News. Come along on our next bicentennial special, American Christmas Down the Years, December 6th and 7th. We'll take you back to a colonial Christmas, hear how it was celebrated during the Civil War, and bring you up to date, talking with people like Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, William Manchester, and many more. Listen for American Christmas Down the Years, the weekend of December 6th and 7th on the CBS Radio Network.
Significant progress is reported in Washington negotiating sessions between representatives of four shopcraft unions and the nation's railroads. Chief Federal Mediator W.J. Ussery reportedly walked whistling from one of the recent sessions. Two of the five issues in dispute have been settled. Earlier, the crisis climate was eased when the union said they would not strike at 6 a.m. as originally announced, as long as the rail carriers continued to bargain in good faith. An adequate supply of electricity is expected this winter in the United States, but there may be problems in the years ahead. That's the latest word from the Federal Power Commission staff report. While the agency foresees ample reserve generating capacity for this winter, Americans are warned they must continue to conserve energy where they can. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
6 minutes after 12 midnight on COIN 97, I'm Bill Garrity. I'll have local news for you at 12:30.